Real people, real radio.
Initiating the truth frequency.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It's Friday. We've done it. We've done it again. We made it through another week, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, guys. Congratulations to all of you out there as well. Certainly in order making it through another week on this ridiculous rock as we're traveling around the universe in these meat popsicle bodies. It's just a wondrous thing to behold, isn't it all? I really appreciate you guys tuning in this morning. Of course, it's Friday. I mentioned that already. Today is the 20th day of February. And if that means anything to you guys out there, hey, good. I don't know. Doesn't mean anything to me. It's another day in the books. We're moving through February. It'll be March before you know it. And probably have Christmas music here before you know it. I hope you guys out there are staying warm. Oh, my goodness. What is going on? Do you notice that they're calling this particular polar vortex a Siberian polar vortex? You know why they're doing that? Obviously, because Putin is to blame for everything. He is, in fact, Mother Nature, ladies and gentlemen, and he does now control the weather, as well as, I thought it was really interesting, the CIA coming out the other day with this this question that they're asking, saying, I wonder if there's other nations out there who are attempting to control the weather. Just dripping in irony, isn't it? I just thought that was great. But anyway, they are calling this here the Siberian polar vortex. Obviously, if you're in Boston right now, some of the pictures coming out of Boston, my gosh, I've never seen snow like what they've got there. I mean, they've got literally, they have dug down to the sidewalks, and there are archways made of snow that people are walking under just to get around. There's archways to get into libraries and public buildings like that. I mean, it's pretty impressive there right now. So I hope everybody up there is staying safe. I thought we were going to get through unscathed this year. Missouri, typically, we get a pretty good snow walloping a few times. Hadn't had any at all this year until just this weekend, and it was only a couple of inches, maybe six. Certainly nothing that we can't handle here. But now they're calling for freezing rain, freezing ice, things like that, which is also pretty typical of Missouri. Man, I was really hoping. We were so close to spring. I could just see it. The trees were budding. Man, I was really excited there for a second. But it does look like it's going to get cold this weekend. So wherever you guys are at, I hope you're staying warm. I hope you're hunkered down. I hope you have all the supplies that you need. I would certainly encourage you guys to have your storable food, things like that, ready, because all you need storable food, get some of that Numana stuff from our good friend over at Numana, and that's what I would recommend right now. Call them, tell them I told you to send to call them too. Maybe you'll get a discount. I don't know. I haven't run that by them yet, but it might be funny to try. Daniel Bergman is the guy that runs Numana. Anyway, great food. All you need is boiling water at that point. If you can make a fire outside, you can eat and you can feed your family, and it's all non-GMO stuff. So I really do highly recommend it, and would encourage you guys to get some of that. Hopefully you've already got some if you're going to get snowed in like I look like I'm going to this weekend. So anyway, what else is going on? Oh my gosh, big, huge show today. So much happening in the news. Obviously, all eyes are currently on Greece right now as they kind of bat this accountability ball back and forth between the EU and the new members of the Greek parliament there. Interesting stuff, ladies and gentlemen. I'm telling you right now, things are coming to a head today. They're moving into the third round of talks, trying to figure out some kind of program, some kind of loan extension, some kind of something. And the markets are all waiting really on bated breath at this point. They're kind of all pretty deadlocked today. But I got to tell you, there's another story that came out, broke out in the news late last night. And I'm tossing it up. I'm up in the air on this one, whether or not this news story is going to have more, potentially more of a geopolitical or economic effect than this entire Greece situation. And I'm not saying that, you know, just off the cuff here. There has been a development that has happened in another part of the world that I think really honestly could have very broad sweeping and deep ramifications in terms of geopolitics and the economy. And it's coming from a very unexpected place, ladies and gentlemen. So we're going to have to talk about that And so if you want to find out about that, you're just going to have to wait through while I get through some of the other news, because we will get to it here in the international news section. Just for everybody out there who knows, if you're a new listener, you can go to redpillreports.com. At the top of the page is always going to be a show section, and it will kind of go over some of the information about our guest and what we're going to be talking about in the second hour of the broadcast. Today's guest, just as a side note, is Andrew Goss. He's a numismatic expert and a monetary historian. We're going to be talking probably a little bit about Greece, but I'm also going to run this other situation by him and see if he agrees with me that there should, could be some other, there's some other players out in the field now, so to speak. So anyway, I do hope you guys stick around for the second hour of the broadcast today. Andrew Goss, very entertaining. We always have really, really good conversations on Friday and learn a lot about, the economy, what's actually going on, and, how to protect yourself in the event that things do go sideways here, which it does look like it, you know, there's potentiality out there of it going sideways is getting bigger and bigger every single day. So, Andrew, last time he was on, we were talking about buying low grade numismatic coins to, preserve some of your value. So we're going to talk about some similar issues to that today. And again, talks also about geopolitics and things like that. Also in that section that I was just talking about, the show section at redpillreports.com, underneath the guest information, you'll always find a slew of articles that we aggregate from around the world, possibly from your neck of the woods as well. Try and keep you guys up to date on everything that's happening around the planet, and as well as we try and give you some of the mainstream stuff too, just so we can kind of get a feel for what it is that they're spoon feeding the masses over those magic glowing boxes in our corners in our living rooms. Not that we have them, you know, I would imagine most of the Red Pill listeners probably don't have TV at this point. Thank you, Truth, for getting the BDI on there. I made an adjustment to my economic section, so I will not neglect to mention that number again before, but truth be told, jumping the gun here on the economic section, letting everybody know that we are at 511 with the Baltic Dry Index today, which is only up about 2 points. Appreciate that update. Love you guys in the chat room. Just so great to have you guys there and helping me do the show. And, you know, being able to put some questions in there for our guests or comments about the articles. Just love having you guys in there. It's so great. That's the whole concept of the show, is to create a format. I'm not that smart. I'm really not. I'm just here. I'm just the guy that owns the microphone at this point. Anytime I can bring very smart listeners together with very smart guests so that you guys can all come to some kind of conclusions together, I feel like I've done my job. So that's what we're trying to do here at Red Pill. Appreciate all the support you guys are giving us. We get fantastic emails from around the world. I got to give some shout outs. Jimmy in LA, love you, man. If you guys need a bass guitar, by the way, get an email to me. I will hook you up with this guy, Jimmy. He lives in LA. I'm talking, 6-string basses and electric guitars, wood stuff, absolutely brilliant things. And I'm not, you know, I'm just plugging him because his, instruments are absolutely incredible. And, I mean, we're talking, this guy goes to the NAMM shows and people playing his instruments, and they're, you know, more respectful of him for making the instrument than he is of them for being the artist. So anyway, just throwing a plug out there for a friend. If you guys, find us on Facebook and want to become friends and are doing something cool, we'll always give you a plug. And, if you guys need a really awesome electric guitar, or more specifically an electric bass guitar, whoo, I'll tell you what, you could find worse ones out there. I'll tell you that. These, Jimmy's stuff is really good. And also I want to say a quick hi to, Susan, my good friend, out in, Korea, also listening to the program these days, and, very, very cool that we get a lot of people around the world. And, thanks, Eric. Eric said he wouldn't listen to me if he didn't think I was smart. I'll tell you the secret to success, Eric. First one that I know. Well, there's a couple secrets to success. One is to surround yourself with people much smarter than yourself, which is what I have always done in life. It makes my life way easier if you're surrounded by people who are much more intelligent than you. Hence why we do the show and why the listeners are so important to what we do, and the guests, as well as the co-creators of Red Pill. Everybody's a genius here but me. I swear to God, my cat's smarter than I am, guys. He could probably do a 4-hour show every day, and it would be just as entertaining as mine. But I do appreciate the support. Love you guys supporting the show, sharing it with your friends. Any support you guys can give to the network, absolutely want to do that. There are so many hosts that are working so hard to bring you guys cutting-edge information that you're just not getting anyplace else. So anything we can do to bolster that, support those guys, want to do that as well. Anyway, getting back to business at hand, I'll give you guys the guest lineup for next week really quickly. Clint Richardson be joining us on Monday. Dr. Deagle, the one and only, be joining us on Tuesday. Jamie Hanshaw is feeling better, so we're going to have our Monarch discussion that we were going to have earlier, I think it was last week, on Wednesday of next week. Wolfgang Halbig will be joining us on Thursday for a discussion about Sandy Hook and all of the developments that are going on there. There has been now a lawsuit filed, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm not talking about the multi-trillion dollar one that apparently is not moving forward. I'm talking about one at the behest of the families and the victims' families actually suing the state, the city, and the school for negligence, which is exactly what we would have expected. Now, why did they wait until the very last day that they could possibly have filed that lawsuit to do it? I don't know. And I'm wondering if Wolfgang will have some insight onto that. So anyway, he'll be joining us on Thursday. Michael Cremo will be joining us on Friday. So it's going to be, as I said, an amazing lineup next week, just like it was this week. And I do really look forward to talking to Andrew Goss here in the next hour. So anyway, let's go ahead. We'll jump ahead, get into some news, because there is, as I said, a lot of things going on right now. First of all, Russian's UN ambassador, Vitaly Shurkin, he has come out denouncing Ukraine's new call for the deployment of UN peacekeepers in the eastern Ukraine as a fairly destructive move. And I'll tell you what, I didn't really know which way I was going to go on this one, because the idea of UN peacekeepers there is still kind of such a fuzzy issue in my mind. But the UN ambassador, Russian's UN ambassador, makes some pretty good points in this article. And he's basically, what he's saying is that the Minsk agreement just happened. Today's the 20th day of February. It went into effect. The ceasefire accord, you know, that was struck in Minsk just went into effect on the 15th. So we're 5 days into this ceasefire right now. So Mr. Churkin, he's saying, you know, if it was such a big deal to get this accord hammered out, and I was there during those 15-hour phone calls that we had, why then, Mr. Poroshenko, would you be talking about changing the scheme? Of Debaltseve, and so things are moving ahead as everyone has agreed to. Why now are you coming out and saying this isn't going to work and we automatically need UN peacekeepers involved? I think those are pretty important questions, and I do think that Poroshenko and the West is trying to do something here. I don't understand exactly what it is, but I don't see getting UN peacekeepers involved as being a de-escalation of the situation there. It just seems to me like we're going to have more interests, more vested interest in the ground in terms of, you know, if we send many, many troops from many, many different places around the world, well, now you have many, many troops from many, many places around the world, all with a vested interest in making sure that people don't get shot in eastern Ukraine. So I kind of agree with Russia on this one. I think it's a little bit telling that Poroshenko would just be immediately saying we need to scrap this whole Minsk Accord, even though it's been fairly successful for the last 5 days, and move right ahead with bringing UN peacekeeping troops. And peacekeeping troops, just as far as I know, usually don't go into war zones. That's usually not typical how the peacekeeping missions work. So again, what would they be trying to do if they went in? Well, they'd be trying to bolster the border. I think they would just be trying to basically iron out all the details that would be required to get the Ukraine into NATO. Again, no foreign troops on your soil. You have to have your borders under control. There's a couple other stipulations, I think, that Rick Rozoff went over with us the other day. So again, I feel like Poroshenko basically had his hat handed to him in Debaltseve, which, you know, obviously is that strategic rail hub between Luhansk and Donetsk, and the people in the east are not just going to give that up. Poroshenko, again, having trouble bolstering any kind of forces from the eastern side to go and fight from the western side to go and fight people on the eastern side, because, you know, you're fighting your brothers and sisters right now. So what's Poroshenko's only real response to this situation? It's that he needs people. He needs boots on the ground. The only way he's going to get that, because they've tried the false flag. They tried to shoot an airliner out of the sky, blame it on Putin. Nobody bought that, right? So that didn't work. They have now pretended that the situation on the eastern side of the country is much worse than it is for the Kievian military. Nobody's buying into that. We're not framing it as a humanitarian crisis, because we all know that we're paying for it, essentially. Remember Barack Obama, we brokered a deal for Ukraine. Poroshenko basically is hemmed into a corner right now, where he is going to be receiving all of this money from the IMF. All of that is going to come with strings attached, and the strings attached are that he obviously clears everything on the eastern side of the country so that we can make way for people like Joe Biden's son, who is now, you know, on the board of directors of the largest natural gas drilling company in Ukraine. None of this is conjecture. This is all reality. This is what's going on. So anyway, Poroshenko right now, obviously between a rock and a hard place, and is going to have to get boots on the ground over there somehow. And if they do have to do it under the guise of UN-mandated peacekeepers, well, I think that's the angle that they're going to take. So again, the situation in Ukraine doesn't look like it's going to de-escalate anytime soon. And I do agree with the UN ambassador from Russia saying, hey, we just had an agreement. Freaking, you know, the paint's not even, the ink's not even dry on this accord yet. And you guys already want to change the plan here. What the heck? I totally agree with that. Moving on, let's talk about the British Royal Air Force for a second. They apparently, again, scrambled warplanes to intercept two Russian bombers off the coast of Cornwall in southwest England, according to the Defense Ministry on Thursday. And this was a government minister, again, sounding the alarm on Kremlin's intentions elsewhere in Europe. This episode magnified concerns about the possibility of further moves by President Vladimir Putin of Russia that could draw in the NATO alliance after advances by pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine. So again, now we see London via the New York Times, again, all Rothschild-owned banking centers here, basically trying to continue to fan the flames of war. Most likely these planes that were Russian were probably in international airspace, and it doesn't matter. We still scrambled some Royal Air Force jets to go and confront them. Of course, Russia says these were just normal meetings or normal flights that they do all the time, just standard normal stuff. So beating the war drums there with our allies. Okay, let's move on to Greece here, because again, they are moving into, I want to make sure I get these articles in the right. Yeah. Okay. So Greece is right now set for a third round of bailout talks following the request for a loan agreement extension. So here's where we're at right now. The Greece government going in today to face a third round of bailout talks after formally submitting a request for a six-month extension of its existing loan agreement with the Eurozone countries. Of course, that extension was struck down. Germany said there's no way we're going to do that. So that's why they're moving into this third round right now. And it really kind of got pretty tense. They essentially asked for the extension that did not have any of the same criteria as the initial loan. Germany said you can take a long walk off a short pier, basically, and said, you know, no. And so Greece said, well, here's the deal. You can either accept this or you cannot accept it. So there was an ultimatum given back to Greece, and Greece basically just kicked that ultimatum right back to the EU. So what is the backup plan for Greece, should they decide over the weekend that this whole EU experiment not really working out so well for the people there? I don't know. We'll have to talk to Andrew about that today, but I'm interested in what the mechanics of the situation would be if they were to decide to leave. But again, Germany has now rejected the Greek bailout extension request. They sent that request earlier this week. Two sides now have until today to agree on a deal. Otherwise, Greece runs out of money. That's essentially where we're at right now, and that's not conjecture. Again, that's pretty serious. They don't have any money. And then plus, let's talk about, I'm sure you guys all understand how the banking system works in terms of fractional reserve lending, works in the opposite way too. You know, every dollar that comes out of the Greek banks is $9 that they can't loan out. So right now, Greek depositors have been spooked by the prospect of a Greek default or worse, an exit from the Eurozone and a possible return to the drachma. They've been pulling euros out of the nation's bank in record amounts over the last few days. The Bank of Greece and the European Central Bank will not report the official cash flows out of Greece until the end of the month. So until the end of February, we won't know exactly how much they pulled out in January. But sources in the Greek banking sector have told Greek newspapers that as much as 25 billion euros, that's about $28.4 billion, have left Greek banks just since the end of December. And according to the same sources, an estimated 900 million euros flowed out of Greek banks on Tuesday. Nearly $1 billion in euros left the banking system there in Greece on Tuesday. Okay. That's the day after the talks broke up in Brussels. This obviously is because of the fear that measures are going to be taken somehow to stem the outflow. And what are those measures? They're going to be capital controls and border controls. And there's other financial editors out there. Actually, the financial editor for Estia, which is a conservative daily newspaper and a pretty influential Sunday newspaper also, is predicting that if outflows do reach €1 billion a day, that capital controls will absolutely have to be imposed. So as of Tuesday, again, today's Friday, so we don't know what the numbers Wednesday or Thursday were, but we almost hit $1 billion in capital outflow from Greece just in one day earlier this week. That's a significant number. That's a pretty significant development. Again, there might be another story coming up, ladies and gentlemen, that could have much, much greater impact on the global economy, and I'm coming to it. It's coming around. But I got to talk about this really quick. The Turkish military right now, listen to this, they're going to buy long-range anti-missile systems from China, even though They're not actually compatible with NATO weapons. Have these people not read a newspaper in the last decade? Why is it that we would be buying military equipment filled with, you know, technical microchips and all kinds of stuff like that? There's been so many reports of all of these components that have been purchased from China, especially for weapons and things like that, that were fake and that were non-functional. So now Turkey is getting ready to spend $3.4 billion on anti-missile systems coming from China that they most likely will not be able to use in coordination with NATO. Is that a telling? Is that telling? Is that saying something about potentially Turkey staying involved with NATO? I don't know. I don't know. I keep bringing that up with people like Rick, who are NATO experts, talking about this trouble with Turkey. And so far, nobody's picking up on that. But I do think Turkey is in a very unique situation right now. And maybe Andrew will have some discussion on that. A little bit of news about the moderate Syrian rebels that we're getting ready to arm in Syria. We're trying again, of course, the program beginning in March or April under the guise of Ron Kirby, Rear Admiral there. Planning on training between 3,000 and 5,000 moderate Muslims there in Syria and Iraq to go and fight against ISIS, of course. But new indications coming out of the Pentagon right now are that they have already identified 1,200. So the first 1,200 of these moderate rebels are already been picked and hand-selected so that they will all start receiving their goodies here pretty soon and start getting this training again. Should be scheduled to start sometime in the next couple of weeks. And the U.S. has also decided to provide its moderate rebel ground force in Syria with armored pickups, machine guns, and communication tools for calling in airstrikes. Do you think perhaps, what are the odds that those moderate Syrian rebels that are now given the capability of calling in airstrikes might be dropping bombs on Assad? Oh, were we not supposed to say that out loud? I totally forgot. Anyway, they're going to get some of them really cool Toyota Hilux pickups with the machine gun mounts and the GPS devices. They're obviously going to be there to help lead a U.S. bombing mission to coordinate strikes against the jihadi militants, according to the Wall Street Journal. But I think if you read between the lines here, moderate jihadist rebels operating inside of Syria with the capability of calling in airstrikes. I think that we can see which way the wind is blowing towards Assad right now. Just saying. Also, about 3,000 trained jihadists are trying to get into Turkey from Syria and Iraq. Again, the trouble with Turkey coming up again. The intentions right now of these quote-unquote 3,000 jihadists with intentions they have the intentions apparently of striking diplomatic targets belonging to anti-ISIS coalition partners, according to Turkish intelligence services. So again, Turkey in this awkward situation where they're part of NATO, they have a porous border. They obviously are going to, if they're not successful against Syria, there's going to be a whole lot of blowback. Plus the fact that we are now creating and arming all of these people just across their border. If I was Turkey, I would not be on board with this whole program. I would just be like, wow, you guys are really digging a hole here and you're doing it in my backyard and I don't really appreciate it. So, this whole issue about, you know, Turkey has been not as helpful as we would have anticipated. Remember, they didn't let us use any of these, any of their air bases or any of our air bases that we've supplanted into, Turkey to bomb ISIS. You know, they've allowed us to use some of the bases for drone strikes, but again, they're kind of taking a very, Swedish, type attack here, kind of hands off. You can kind of use the space, but we're not going to commit too much because again, look at what happened in Iraq. Look at what happened in Yemen. Look at what happened in that other place, starts with the A, Afghanistan. Okay, so, yeah, I totally agree, Prometheus, in the chat room. Turkey is helping ISIS, and they should be helping ISIS because ISIS is from there, and I wouldn't want to piss off a whole bunch of people, you know, under the request of the United States when the United States is just going to walk away from the situation 10 years from now. That's what's going to happen. That's what happened in Afghanistan. It's what's going on in Yemen right now. So why would Turkey want to get all flustered up and, you know, help the United States create a stupidly huge problem there, just like Libya, and then walk away? That's stupid. I would not be doing that. Okay, big, huge news. I keep talking about this. This is the most important story of the day, ladies and gentlemen. And I do think, again, far-reaching geopolitical and economic impact to this. And it's coming out of North Korea. Again, I said a very surprising place. But Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea, first of all, is he not the most adorable dictator ever? He looks to me, and maybe it's just me, but he looks to me like somebody put a suit on a gummy bear. That's what I picture every time I look at Kim Jong-un. He's just the most adorable, tyrannical dictator we could ever possibly ask for. But he now, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm not joking when I say this, he is sporting a new haircut and a new eyebrow cut. this is, I mean, we're talking a double whammy here. So at the Politburo meeting on Wednesday, Supreme Leader of the North Korean Union there, Kim Jong-un, debuted a new haircut. And ladies and gentlemen, it is glorious. It is a pompadour to put all other pompadours to rest. It is easily 4 inches tall. It is, I just don't even have, there's so many questions that come to mind. We have to talk about this. I mean, okay. So, it's wedge shaped. He's still sporting the shaved sides. So that's really cool. But it does sort of look like a small dormant woodland creature. So my questions are these. What instructions did Kim Jong-un give his barber that resulted in this fantastically wonderful new haircut? Was it, hey, you know trapezoids? Was that the first question? Or perhaps was it, hey, you know how my main priority is to ensure that my ears don't feel crowded? Let's work on that. Let's do the, let's work on a do that really lets the old face handles breathe. That's what I think he was saying. Or, okay, but really, let's get on to some serious points here. Kim Jong-un famously adopted the shaved side, center-parted haircut as a way to signal his connection with his grandfather and the country's founding leader, Kim Il-sung. Now the sides are still shaved, but the center part is gone. What does it mean, ladies and gentlemen? Could it be that the new style conveys an intent to embrace the legacy of his father, Kim Jong-il, who often also sported a uniform crest of hair unbroken by any parting? Or is it intending to signify that North Korea, like Kim Jong-un's hair, is now reaching new heights and cannot be stopped by gravity or any other natural force? Does his haircut sail majestically ever upwards, unlike the North Korean Unha rocket that failed spectacularly after the launch in 2012, breaking up over the Sea of Japan? Could Jim Ung's new haircut, in fact, carry a warhead? And could it, in fact, strike Seoul? Who knows? Will his haircut affect the possible resumption of the six-party talks on the future of North Korea's nuclear weapons program? All these questions raging through my mind right now. What do you guys think out there? This is just an amazing development, ladies and gentlemen. It is, honestly, it looks like, I'm going to coin this haircut the David from 90210, because it looks like early David from 90210. Somebody out there is laughing right now. We're going to be right back. 3 minute break. More news to come back to, guys. Keep it right here.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here, and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. Hemp U.S. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Like a cancer that's silently spreading.
Aging for Truth with Joe Bannister.
Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, who can tell me how to put a picture in the chat room? Do I have to push a special button or something? Because I can't figure out how to do it. I was going to put a picture of Kim Jong-un's new haircut in there. Because honestly, I really think with the power of this new haircut, it might by itself have some voting rights in this these new talks that are coming up. Anyway, okay, let's jump back into some more serious stuff here. There is, again, this Siberian Polar Express or Polar Vortex that's happening right now. I just want to remind everybody that it is stupidly cold outside and to please be prepared. If you're going out, have some supplies in your car. Be ready for any kind of contingency. It's going to be cold and it's going to be cold for a while here. They're saying this is the coldest air of the season starting to surge south this week. So today and tomorrow, very, very cold. I just find it very funny that they're calling it Siberian. Just trying to keep that news cycle alive and going here. Talk a little bit too about Californians. You guys are going to have a little bit of an issue here coming up. Apparently, tens of thousands of people who buy their health insurance through Covered California are going to be getting a fairly unpleasant surprise when you guys file your taxes this year. So right now, there have been about 100,000 of these 1095A forms, which is the document required for enrollees to file their tax returns. There's been about 100,000 of these 1095As that have gone out with incorrect or missing data on them. So about 12% of the forms generated by Covered California, which is the health insurance, which you need to then correlate to your, you know, IRS tax forms, they're all wrong, apparently. So they're trying to do what they can, but they said that they knew that they were wrong, but they were going to send them out anyway because they didn't want to miss the deadline, which was the February 2nd. So anyway, the corrected forms should be going out at the end of the month. But again, if those forms are messed up also, well, enrollees, you're going to have to file a dispute, probably wait another 60 days for a response. That's going to put you well past the April 15th deadline. And in some cases, probably result in extended filing fees or interest on taxes owed, things like that. So again, the Obamacare is biting everybody in the butt right now, and it's all coming down to more of this whole IRS thing. I want to talk a little bit about Mr. Obama here for just a second, too, because he made a pretty unusual statement the other day. He was talking again at this conference on Wednesday, which was the Countering Violent Extremism Conference. They were a bunch of, you know, world leaders got together in Washington to talk about this. And, you know, Barack Obama has said some really silly things in the past. I'm not going to take that away from him. But he actually said in this particular speech that Islam has been woven into the fabric of our country since its founding, which I don't really know if I understand what exactly he is talking about right there. And it's, I'm not trying to come on the radio and be anti-Muslim because I'm certainly not anti-Muslim. I'm anti-violence and anti-extremism. But I don't necessarily, you know, I think every religion has got its whack jobs in it. I think the people who are normal Muslims, I know a couple of people who are normal Muslims, and they probably look at violent extremists a lot, like the way that we look at the Baptist, Hillsborough Baptist Church guys that, you know, come and protest, funerals and things like that. So every religion's got its, you know, whack jobs in it. And what I take a stance against is his idea that Islam has somehow been woven into the fabric of our country since it was founded, because that's a little bit of a reach, I think. He goes on to say, here in America, Islam has been woven into the fabric of our country since its founding. Generations of Muslim immigrants came here to and went to work as farmers and merchants and factory workers and helped lay the railroads to build up America. He also goes on to say that the first Islamic center in New York City was founded in the 1890s, and America's first mosque He said this was an interesting fact, was in North Dakota, established in 1929. Okay, so 1890 and 1929. Now, granted, both of those things are milestones for sure, but they don't really have anything to do with our nation's founding. They actually happened, well, pretty far after the nation's founding. I'm not that good at history, but I'm pretty sure our country was founded before 1890. So did a little looking into the background on this, and according to a Heritage Foundation paper, shortly after America's founding of the United States, we were, in fact, dragged into the affairs of the Islamic world by an escalating series of unprovoked attacks on Americans by Muslim pirates, who were at the time considered to be the terrorists of the seas. They looted American ships, they captured American sailors, and they held them for ransom and sold them as slaves. So the paper actually goes on to note that America's struggle with Muslim pirates from the Barbary states, which would be modern-day Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, and Libya, began very soon after the 13 colonies declared their independence from Britain in 1776 and continued for roughly four decades. That kind of flies in the face. I mean, I guess you could include that as being, you know, part of our tapestry that weaved us all together, because obviously piracy at the time was a pretty big issue. But at the same time, do we want to glorify those events and say that that was, you know, a mainstay or a main part of our our founding of the country? It doesn't make sense to me. So I don't know. Barack Obama is kind of out in the woods on that one for me. Okay, talking a little bit about the West Coast port shutdown. Somebody asked me about that just a second ago on the red dot on my mailbox. You better believe that's right, Woodwolf. Man, I'll tell you what, if you guys aren't in the chat room, you're missing a lot of good stuff. So pardon me for just sometimes responding to things that you guys can't see on the radio, because, again, if you go to truthfrequencyradio.com and get in the chat room, you're going to meet a whole bunch of fantastically intelligent people, and our listeners are some of the smartest in the world. These are the kind of people you want to be talking to. And Woodwolf pointed out, man, red dot on my mailbox. I think you're probably right. I'm definitely on a list. We'll say that for sure. Okay, let's talk about the West Coast port talks. They have broken down again last night. The talks trying to get back on track, opening up the West Coast ports, did not happen last night. So shipping executives and union leaders for dock workers at 29 different West Coast ports ended a third straight day of contract talks late last night without a settlement, despite arm twisting from the U.S. Labor Secretary, and they are planning on meeting again today. So the Labor Secretary, Tom Perez, joined the talks in San Francisco on Tuesday at the behest of Barack Obama, who has come obviously under growing political pressure to intervene in a dispute that has rippled through the Trans-Pacific commercial supply chain and could cost the U.S. economy billions and billions of dollars. The International Longshore and Warehouse Union, representing about 20,000 dock workers, has been locked in negotiations for 9 months with the bargaining agent for shippers and terminal operators, being the Pacific Maritime Association. And tensions arising from the talks have played out in a worsening cargo congestion that has severely slowed freight traffic at ports that handle nearly half of all U.S. maritime trade and more than 70% of imports from Asia. More recently, the shipping companies have curtailed operations sharply at the marine terminals, suspending the loading and unloading of cargo vessels for night shifts, holidays, and weekends at the five busiest ports. And these disruptions have reverberated through the U.S. economy, extending to agriculture, manufacturing, retailing, and transportation. Cargo loads that would normally take a few days to clear have been facing lag times of up to 2 weeks or more as dozens of inbound freighters stack up along the coast waiting for their berths to be open. And the longer-term concern right now has been that the U.S. export business lost to other countries' imports may not return once the West Coast dock worker crisis ends. So that is where we're at right now, ladies and gentlemen, and it probably does have a lot to do with why the BDI is still sitting at about 5.11 today, only up about 2 points, but really flirting with dangerous lows at this point. The disagreements right now, money, it's all money. These people don't want to work, and they want to get paid more. I mean, it's a sorry to pigeonhole everybody out there, but that's what it is people want more money. They don't feel like they're getting paid enough. So there you go. I mean, is it a reasonable thing for them to say? I don't know. I think that a lot of these guys, I think on average, a dock worker out there makes like $120K a year. Granted, you got to live in California, so the cost of living is really high, but still, that's a pretty significant amount of money. Local economies in, upstate New York right now are posing a question. Is it possible to secede to Pennsylvania. Why are they trying to do this? Well, they're trying to do it right now because of the fracking ban in New York, and there is not a fracking ban in Pennsylvania. So a lot of these upstate New York town associations are looking into whether or not they can secede to Pennsylvania because they want to basically have the right to get to the resources that they feel like they own, you know. And there's the debate, you know. It's interesting the way this frames out because it's the people there who are saying, you know, we own this property, we should have the right to drill, we should have the right to give this land to a company to come in and frack if it's, you know, if it's truly our land. And then you kind of come down into a, you know, there's your debacle. Where do your rights stop and where do your neighbor's rights begin? Because if you come in and you frack and they continue to do fracking the way they've been doing and they tarnish the water supply, well, that affects everybody around you. So do you have the right to sell things out from under you at the expense of others? I don't know. And it does look like, again, though, that they're definitely toying with the idea of moving four different counties down into Pennsylvania so that they can unload, you know, get out from under this law, keeping them from fracking. Just shows you how much the love of money moves things right now. I wanted to point out again, too, we're having this big, huge debate about Barack Obama's executive order that he supposedly signed to stop the deportation of, what, 4.9 million Americans or something like that. But there's been a couple people who have pointed out, and I think it is an important point, that he actually never signed an executive order. So the fact that it didn't come in the registry, which is what that judge is saying, remember down in the Fifth Circuit there, saying it because it wasn't, ever put in the registry, that it didn't have any opportunity for comment from the public, so nobody really could argue with it. But it wasn't signed in the first place. So, you know, I think that, President Barack Obama is gonna have a lot more trouble going forward trying to get this whole amnesty thing, passed. So anyway, got good news and I got bad news from Seattle. I was trying to throw a Seattle story in when something is going on and we're talking about the very large drill. Remember, the Bertha drill that got stuck under the streets of Seattle there. It hit some kind of object they weren't anticipating. Well, the good news is that yesterday, Bertha actually moved about 3 feet. The bad news is that we don't know if that earlier good news was good news or not because they don't really know what's going on inside of this drill. So they did get it to move about 3 feet, but it started to overheat and there are some seals that are blown. So they're trying to use it, trying to move forward, but it could get really costly here very quickly. So again, good news is that it moved. The bad news is that we're not sure that that movement was actually good news or not. So that's what's going on, in the national news right now. Let's go over and check out what is going on in the economy, because there is a lot of economic stories going on right now. Let's talk real quick about the markets. Let's see here. I'm going over to the indices. We're talking flat trading here, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know. It would be really cool if something would happen in the markets just so we had something to talk about, but it's just not happening right now. S&P is still sitting at 209.1, down only, you know, 3. Let's look at the commodities right now. Gold, flat can possibly be, 1207.80. Big time, still drawdown from that 1300 we saw not a couple of weeks ago. Silver also coming down a little bit today, 16.37 right now. Crude oil, down, but still at 51.60. So really not a lot of move in the crude oil markets. The euro to dollar index is down just a touch today, 1.13. So, that's what's going on there. And Bitcoin is up just about a dollar today, also 237. We'll get you a Bitcoin right now. I want to talk real quick. Let's check and see. I've got BDI at 511. Did somebody in the chat room said it might have been at about 509 right now? So someplace between 509 and 511, but again, flirting with all-time lows pretty much on a weekly basis here right now. Yes, Obsidian, Seattle is in a pickle with that drill. I will give you that. A lot of people are on the fence about what's going on there. Let's see here. I want to talk a little bit about usury because this article that Sprott Money put out, Jeff Nielsen put this article out from Sprott Money, and I thought this was absolutely fantastic because a lot of people out there may not really understand what we're talking about when we say that the Federal Reserve and the central banking systems and this banking cartel that's going on really is operating a Ponzi scheme. And I'm going to come back to this when we get Andrew on to talk just real fundamentally about what a Ponzi scheme is and why this seems to be one. But one of the main points as to why I think this is a Ponzi scheme is interest, right? We have interest. Usury is what we used to call that, and it was used to be outlawed in religious, moral, ethical, you know, across the board. Usury was not something that we would tolerate for a long, long time. But here we are in this fractional reserve lending where everybody has to borrow money at interest. But anyway, I want to talk about usury right now because there's a point to be made regarding the banks and the interest rates at which the banks and the banking cartels, the private owners of the banks, are able to get money. Okay, how do we define usury? In a world where our big banks and the billionaires who own them receive trillions and trillions of dollars every year, and they all get it at 0% interest. That literally means they get free money, right? The only way to quantify differentials in proportionate terms is through a function called math. And I was told when I started the radio show there wasn't going to be a lot of math involved. But I can follow myself through this math, so I hope you guys can too. So what we're talking about is the difference between 0% interest rates and 1% interest rates, or any other higher interest rates that the bank might charge you to borrow money that they got at 0%. So the big banks, they get all their own money, 0% interest, right? So as such, charging even a 1% interest rate on the money they lend isn't merely a much higher rate of interest, right? In terms of multiplication, it is an infinitely higher rate of interest. And you can check this math for yourself by using something called arithmetic, right? Anything multiplied by zero is zero. Thus, the multiplicative of the differential between 0% and 1% is in fact infinity, okay? Critics, people out there who disagree with me, might be arguing that mathematical analysis of this nature somehow distorts the conclusion about the absurd differential between those who get their money at 0%, i.e. for free, and those who don't. But such criticism would fail to acknowledge the concept of logic and morality, which is illustrated, or the lack of logic and morality, which is illustrated by this ultra-extreme mathematical differential, okay? One tiny privileged class, the banks and the billionaires who own them, get all their money for free. Everyone else does not. For the privileged class, obtaining money for free is always a privilege. It's never a burden, right? But for everyone else, obtaining their money is always a burden. It is never a privilege. This represents not merely an advantage or even a large advantage of the privileged class, but it actually reflects a fundamental act of discrimination, okay? It is arguably the most economically heinous form of discrimination ever put out in the history of mankind. One class is given something for free, something for which everyone else is required to pay. That in the real form of real non-fraudulent rate of interest, okay? This is a scam. Revealed by the function of multiplication, there can only be two possible remedies for this fundamental systemic and economic discrimination. Either everybody must receive their money for free, or no one can be granted free money. That's it. The fairness of this point is logic, and usury is not merely elemental, it's tautological. So let's just look at this through an example. Let's say tomorrow morning, average Joe and average Jane wake up, and you can borrow any money for free, right? What are you going to do? You're going to go down to the bank, and you're going to take out a loan for a one with nine zeros after it, right? Day one. Because you can. Why wouldn't you? Everybody's going to do that. Then next day, you're going to go back and you take out a loan for a one with 35 zeros behind it, right? So you can only see that within about 3 days, all the money becomes completely useless. It's just like if you were to be trying to say sand on a beach has value just by fiat. It doesn't have value because it's an infinite supply. That's what's going on with our money system, ladies and gentlemen. It is an infinite supply, and it's being provided to billionaires for nothing. And then they are charging us interest. This is not – it's a Ponzi scheme. So the official 0% interest rate of the United States government and all near zero interest rates across the fraudulent West established two fundamental principles in mathematical, economic, and logically irrefutable forms. Number one, as long as the big banks get their money at 0%, any rate of interest that they charge to their victims is usury in its most extreme and heinous form, right? And number two, because the big banks are getting their money for free, all of our Western currencies have effectively been rendered worthless. And that is not conjecture. That is absolutely what is going on. The problem is is that the band keeps playing, ladies and gentlemen, and people do not want to separate themselves. Everybody has a lot vested in this particular show. So, you know, what do you mean my bank account doesn't have any value to it? I've, yeah, all these, you know, as, Bill Hicks used to say, look at the, you know, worry lines on my furrowed brow here. And, you know, I've got all this stress. Obviously this is all real. Everything, it's not. It's all fake, ladies and gentlemen. Every aspect of everything that's going on around you is a fraud at this point. Caterpillar having some pretty big problems right now. They are down 27% in terms of their 3-month sales statistics. Obviously Caterpillar, supplying a lot to the global mining industry and the global, oil and fracking industries. So they are down right now 27% year over year, according to their own numbers right now. So, just take that again as another indicator that things are not going as well as they would like us to believe. But here's an interesting story, and I guess it might be good news to somebody, but Walmart had a pretty significant announcement yesterday. They are hiking the pay for 500,000 workers nationwide. They're moving to a program where hourly associates are going to earn at least $1.75 above the federal minimum wage. So again, by February 1st, of 2016, so apparently it's going to take them a year to get this plan into effect, current associates will earn at least $10 an hour if you work at Walmart. So I don't know. I mean, is that enough? What bothers me about this whole minimum wage thing is that people forget the fact that the fiat currencies that are running the countries right now are floated on your backs. They are floated based on your time, talent, and energy. Your time, talent, and energy is the only creative force on the planet. And I know a lot of people think, oh, gold's valuable. I'll tell you what, how valuable is gold if there's no people? Yeah, it has no value for anyone. What has value on the planet? Your ability to think, your ability to create, your ability to convince. Those are the things that have value. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what the bankers have clandestinely stolen from you and used it to float your fiat currency. They do that through contract law with your birth certificate, your social security number. Anytime you sign something with a bank, you're giving them security instruments because you are giving them your signature, and your promise is the thing that floats value. So at the same time that these gangbangsters is what I like to call them, at the same time that they have created this system to steal your time, talent, and energy and funnel it into, you know, this fiat currency, they have the audacity to turn around then and tell you what you're worth in that freaking, in that currency. That's the game. That's the rub. So not only are they telling you that your time, talent, and energy is worth barely anything because they don't even tell you that that's what floats the currency, then they tell you your time, talent, and energy is worth $10 an hour or $12 an hour when it's all a scam. It doesn't make any sense. Why don't we pay everybody $300 an hour? Who cares? They're just printing stuff on a computer screen. It just makes me so angry, what the system that we're under right now, guys. I'm sorry. That's all good news from Japan right now. The world's third largest economy has been plagued by slow growth, but the government has combated it with loose monetary policy, which has now sent the yen to record lows against the dollar and other hard currencies. So now that obviously their country is very export dependent, and their economy has, they were up about 15% yesterday on the old stock market there, the Nikkei 225, which is all the big major brand name companies of Japan, Toyota, Honda, Mitsubishi, Nissan, stuff like that. So again, dollar value against the yuan has gone up. Yuan's gone down, which makes the export there less expensive, which is good for Japan, I guess. So again, 17% boost in exports since January, and the stock market up about 14% yesterday. So happy days are here in Japan, ladies and gentlemen. I've talked about this also real quick because this story is some bad news coming out of France. Again, I'm going to run out of time before I even get into some of the health and tech stuff, but there are some really good stories there today. And if you go to redpillreports.com in the show section, you'll be able to find all of them there, and you'll realize just how bad I am at doing my job, because I ramble about stuff, ladies and gentlemen, but I have the mic. So there you go. I want to talk about the situation that happened in Paris. A retired gentleman there had his home, broken into kind of by con artists. There were two con artists showed up posing as police officers, right? So they came, they said they were investigating a gold robbery in the area, and they asked this retired gentleman if he in fact had some gold bullion and asked if they could inspect it Red flag number one, ladies and gentlemen. He said, yes, let them go. One of the robbers distracted the guy, and the other guy ran off with about $500,000 in gold bars from this poor retiree in France. So lots of morals around this story. First of all, don't tell people that you've got gold in your house. I don't care who they are. I mean, talk about it in a will. That's great. Talk about it with your very, very close, confidential, you know, family members and things like that so people know what's going on. But don't let the information out. Buy your gold from a reputable dealer that understands that your personal information needs to be protected. So those are important things. Maybe get in a safe someplace in your home where that gold is going to be protected. If you can afford to have $500,000 in gold in your house, you can afford to buy a safe, ladies and gentlemen. That's what I'm thinking here. So this poor guy fell into a couple really serious traps here, and really no indication as to why he was targeted. But of course, you know, somebody knew that he had all this gold there. So somebody knew, and somebody let these con artists know, and they showed up and they fleeced him of 13 gold bars by, as I said, about $500,000 worth of gold. And again, just be cautious out there, ladies and gentlemen. We always talk about acquisition of gold, hedging your bets against financial collapse, but you got to be able to protect it. It's not enough to just have it in your house, and it's certainly not enough if you're not going to be cognizant of who knows that you have it in your house and how you're keeping it in your house. It's just important stuff to be considering. So I wanted to bring that story to everybody's attention, so that nobody else falls into that trap, because I can't even imagine. I mean, that's probably that guy's whole retirement fund there. Also want to point out too, if you got a whole bunch of money and are interested in Bitcoin, they are getting ready to do, the U.S. Marshals is who I'm talking to about, as they getting ready to do the next round of the Bitcoin auction. They are going to be auctioning off another 50,000 Bitcoins. These are Bitcoins that they took from the Silk Road. Ulbricht was the guy's name. He just got prosecuted, and it looks like they're going to be scheduling his how much time he's going to be in jail. They're going to disclose that in May. But anyway, while he's waiting for that to happen, we are going to see another 50,000 of his Bitcoins getting auctioned off again, starting on the 5th of March. So if you were in the market for some Bitcoin right now, that might be a good place to go and get a whole bunch of them. I don't know. There's some interesting information about Mt. Gox too. Mt. Gox was that big Bitcoin exchange that got shut down because it was apparently a lot of things were stolen. But apparently there's been an independent investigation team that has now discovered that one of the guys who was running Mt. Gox was running a bot at the same time, and the bot was making all these crazy huge Bitcoin orders, and like, you know, quarter million Bitcoin at a time, and they can show that while this bot was operating and making these huge purchases, that was actually part of the reason that the price went so high on Bitcoin. So Mt. Gox kind of pumping and dumping, I guess, so to speak, on this one. So just got to be careful out there. You never know what's going to go on. We're going to go to this 3-minute break, you guys. When we come back, we will hopefully have Andrew Gause on the show. We'll be talking about economics and geopolitical events from around the world. Keep it right here, guys. 3-minute break.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Did you know that the blue lotus flower was used by the ancient Egyptians as an aphrodisiac to experience feelings of euphoria and ecstasy? And ecstasy. And ecstasy. Did you know that Thai kratom was used by the Buddhist monks to produce a relaxing and dreamlike state? Did you know San Pedro cactus was used by the Native Americans to quest for visions and heal the body? Bouncing Bear Botanicals is your number one supplier of rare and sacred plants and a proud sponsor of Truth Frequency Radio. By by clicking on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can learn more about a vast selection of entheogens, including Amanita muscaria, also known as the sacred mushroom. So click on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, and you'll also get up to $40 off your next order.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker, special JFK 50th anniversary signed limited edition. $30 including shipping, limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
No hate, no hype, no fear. We are TFFR.
Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the radio show. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. Thank you guys so much also for being in the chat room right now. We are doing our best to get a hold of Mr. Gauge right now, so just bear with me here real quick. We're going to see if we can add a call here, if I can do this. We'll see if I can get this done. But I am getting word right now that he is standing by, so hang on just 1 second. Beauty of live radio. Appreciate you guys all being with us and appreciate you guys being in the chat room. As well, you might hear a little bit of a ringtone here, so just bear with me, guys. Beauty of live radio. Good times. Let's see if we get through it. All of you guys talking about how nice the weather is in the chat room, if you guys could knock it off, that would be great, because it is cold here, and I don't particularly care for it. So let's see if we can get Mr. Gauze answered here. I'm going to get back on phone line as well here, maybe.
Oh, Sandy, may I help you?
Hey, is this Andrew Gauze?
It is indeed.
Andrew Gauze, the one and only. Well, sir, I hate to just throw a radio show at you, but we're live on the air right now. How are you doing today?
Good, man. I'm sorry I didn't grab you before.
That's okay. That's okay, man. I don't know if you were up there dealing with the weather or something like that. Is it absolutely frigid where you are?
Yeah, we're, in single digits, low single digits. We're breaking records that are 20 years old. So it's... I know there are people in South Dakota and whatnot that are laughing.
Right.
But, yeah, and pity the folks in Boston. But yes, for New York City, it's very cold.
I'm telling you, man, I finally broke down and was looking at some of the pictures from Boston just last night, and I've never seen anything like it. I mean, I know there's some hardy folks up there in the Northeast, but the hardiness, I would have been done with the hardiness about a month and a half ago. There's some places where they've got like 40 feet of snow. They just have no place left to put it. I've never seen anything like it, man. So I'm glad that you're at least staying somewhat warm and safe in New York.
Well, and fortunately, I live in the suburbs right outside of New York City in Bergen County, and so here we have at least a little land to put the snow on in the city. It's still, cars are still buried down for 3 weeks from the first big snowstorm, and because it was so cold, nothing melted. So it's a mess, but you know what? We'll get through it, no problem.
Yeah, Roger that. That's the attitude I like. Okay, well, ladies and gentlemen, let's get back on track here. Of course, we're speaking to the one and only Andrew Gauze. He's generous enough to come and join us usually about once a month, and we always have the most entertaining conversations on a Friday. He's honestly one of my very favorite guests that we've got, and we always end up laughing quite a bit about the world, because if you can't laugh at the world at this point, Andrew, I don't know what's left to do. But just to give new listeners out there a little insight, insight as to who you are, obviously a nationally recognized U.S. monetary historian and a numismatic expert, been appraising Americans about the pitfalls of our electronic banking system and banking transactions and the intrusion of Big Brother as we move into this cashless society. He's also been studying and lecturing on the problems and solutions connected to our monetary system for more than about two decades now. He tackles the challenging questions about America's real economic future and provides the scene insights into the scene about how the politicians and bankers in D.C. are secretly planning on dealing with the debt crisis. Let's start right there. What debt crisis? What do you? I thought everything was fantastic out here, Andrew. Is there a debt crisis that I should know about?
Indeed, there is one that you should know about. It seems that worldwide we've allowed for the creation of three times as much debt as there is, in fact, money to pay.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this creates a rather interesting circumstance. If you owe $3 and you only have a dollar, you either pay everyone 30 cents on the dollar or you come up with two more dollars. That's really the choice.
Right.
And from the perspective of the central banks, they're trying to do a combination of the two. So they're trying to pay the less than full face value for many of the defaulted loans and at the same time increase the money supply so that there's money available to pay these loans.
Right.
And that, in a nutshell, really is what the central bankers are up to.
Yes. So, I mean, we're, what, two centuries at least into this whole Ponzi scheme at this point. And it doesn't seem like I just did a huge tirade about usury, and about the difference between a 0% interest rate that the banks get and the 1% interest rate. And that you could really mathematically show that that was actually an infinite difference. And that would actually, the difference between 0% free money and 1% really carries with it some pretty, major ethical concerns, just because, again, it's a Ponzi scheme. But I want to kind of get to the root of why we consider this banking system to be a Ponzi scheme, just in case there's anybody out there who doesn't know. You know what I mean? Like, what fundamentally about this?
I think I understand. Let's say that it's more of a pyramid, JD, because a Ponzi scheme suggests that we're bringing in new investors with substance, and we're paying off the previous investors with the money from the new investors. That was Ponzi's game.
Okay.
And, you know, Social Security could certainly be viewed as a Ponzi scheme.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So we've already spent the money that the previous investors put in, and now we're counting on the money from the new investors in order to pay the old ones off. And that certainly is a valid description. But in the case of fiat banking, it's more like slicing a pizza pie, you know. You got 16 people showing up at your party and you only ordered one pizza, so you cut all the slices in half. Everyone still gets a slice, but it's just not as filling as it was
okay.
when there were only 8 people. And so this really has been what the central banks have done through the issuance of unbacked or fiduciary money. And, you know, the real difference between fiduciary money and commodity money should be well-known or well-established by your listeners.
Right.
They should understand that fiduciary money is when someone else owes you something. And commodity money, of course, follows the value. So when somebody pays you with a solid silver dollar, you don't have to rely on anything else. You've been paid. When they pay you with a note for a dollar, why, then it's a claim. And,
right.
and essentially, in 1971, we converted the whole system to one of claims. Made the shift really from commodity money to fiduciary money.
Mm-hmm.
Because as loose as they played with the rules before 1971, they still maintained this fiction that there were 35 paper dollars for every ounce of gold in the treasury.
Right.
Now we don't even attempt to maintain that fiction. And we've kind of taken the governor off of the engine, which really is what the gold standard was intended to operate as. So we understand the nature of credit. And people are willing to extend credit, but the standard value of a dollar was what kept everyone in check. You knew you were paying back a certain quantity of silver or a certain quantity of gold coin.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of fostered prudence. Once you eliminated the requirement that you pay a physical commodity or a thing in exchange for a debt, well, then prudence went out the window and the governor came off the engine. And from that moment to this, the money supply has gone from less than $1 trillion to over $25 trillion. And that really should explain, in a nutshell, what happened to your money.
Right. Well, and you know, the thing about it that really strikes me is that we've got this private banking institution, you know, the Fed, and they essentially are trading with the Treasury for bonds, right? And that's a one-for-one trade. But then at the same time, right. they say, you got to pay us more than the principal that we're going to print, and the only currency that we accept is our currency, and the only way that you guys can get it is to borrow more at more interest. So it's like this vicious cycle that's never, ever going to go away.
Precisely. And, you know, the critical point there is, so, okay, the Treasury writes a bond. I owe you $1 billion. Mm-hmm. And they hand that over to the Federal Reserve. Now, let's say, for argument's sake, that the Federal Reserve creates the entire $1 billion, that none of it is absorbed from the existing supply. That's all they create. And even if only 1% interest is due a year, they don't create that. So that has to be drawn from the existing supply. Mm-hmm. And you're right. It is just a perpetual cycle. They even have their funny name, right, kicking the can down the road, which is essentially what they do. So by constantly rolling over this debt, it gets bigger, and I doubt that will ever be paid. I don't think, as a matter of fact, if you paid off the national debt,
there'd be no money.
And extinguished, yeah, there'd be no money in circulation. Exactly. So Alexander Hamilton famously argued that, you know, the national debt is a national blessing because it gives the banks a means with which to inject liquidity into the system through the purchase of these bonds. I argue that it's turned into a national curse. And we need to really do something about it.
Right. Well, and I think it does look like with the things that are going on around the world, I mean, you and I don't think we've spoken in probably 5 or 6 weeks, but we've had some depeggings from the dollar. Obviously, a lot of eyes are on Greece right now. But I want to kind of backtrack just a quick section here for a minute, just because I know you really study geopolitics and economics. And given what's going on in Greece right now, I'm wondering what event you think is going to have a more profound effect both geopolitically and economically. Do you think it will be the potential Greek exit from the euro, or do you think it might in fact be Kim Jong-un's new haircut? Have you seen Kim Jong-un's
haircut?
Oh, I'm telling you, man, it is a force to be reckoned with.
No, it is a badass haircut, no doubt about it, man. he's ready for Hollywood with that haircut.
I'm telling you.
But well, at the same time, see, I think that the entire Greek affair is all theater. To me, if you read the writings of the finance minister there, Alex, as we'll call him, and it's widely available if you want to read, you know, his suggestion, you know, the idea that he is a lightning rod for what the central bank really wants. You know, many people view him as this maverick who's going to, you know, get Greece what they want. But all that the central bank really wants is a central bank. You know, we've been operating in the EU with 19 disparate central banks, each one smaller than the mega center banks that own and control the Federal Reserve. Mm-hmm. So imagine, you know, you're the little central bank of Greece and you're trying to stand against Citigroup or JP Morgan.
What?
You can't do it. When you need a bigger institution. That's his entire argument. And the idea that this will be used simply to get their minds right. If you remember the old Cool Hand Luke movie, you know, these guys, the central authority in Europe, the ECB, want to operate exactly like the Fed, but because they had to trick these 19 nations into surrendering their financial and economic sovereignty, they haven't yet removed the velvet glove from the iron fist. They're, you know, trying to be as ginger as they can about it. But in reality, what's going to end up happening is these individual central banks are going to give up their monetary autonomy to an ECB that has much more strength than it did going into the crisis. And, yeah, Germany will take a key role much the same way as the United States did in the IMF. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, at the end of the day, what's going to happen, Greece is going to stay in the European system, and the central bank, the ECB, will gain more power. And if you even read the writings again of Alexis, you'll see what he is suggesting is that instead of the National Bank of Greece dealing with the bad banks in Greece, they should be just handed over to ECB and dealt with directly by the ECB.
Hmm.
And this bypassing of national monetary authority is one of the key elements in the ECB's platform. They want the ability to regulate Greek banks as well as Italian banks and others. So ultimately, at the end of the day, that's what I believe will happen. You'll have a deal made with Greece and an ECB that emerges from this crisis much stronger And let me tell you, when they crank up the press, everyone is going to feel so good that they're going to say, this was the right thing to do, and I'm glad we did it. But in reality, it'll put them in the same position that we were put in 1971. The governor or the constraints on the European Central Bank will be removed, and they'll be free to inflate their currency just at the same rate that we have. And there goes the strong dollar, incidentally.
Yeah, I was just going to say, by we feel good, you mean the equities markets that relate to the euro, really, right?
Right, correct. But you know, having the same ability to monetize debt as the Federal Reserve does, and losing our...
Well, might have lost Andrew there. Hang on a second here, kids. Andrew, can you hear me, buddy? Ah, losing him. Let me see if I can disconnect, get him back on here in just a second. Hang on, guys. Hang on. Let's see if we can get him back on the horn here. Beauty of live radio, ladies and gentlemen. Thank God for modern technology. It saves us so much time. Keeps us all moving forward here. One ringy dingy. Back on. Here, two ringy dingies. I don't know why I'm telling you about the ringy dingies, but. Hopefully. See if we can get Mr. Andrew Gauze back. Hello.
Andrew Gauze
is not available at the moment.
Not looking good there right this second, guys. We'll try it again here. We'll see if we can get busted back through. Good times. So anyway, Andrew pretty much predicting pretty staunchly there that Greece is going to stay in the euro, which is interesting because that's the same thing.
Was it something I said?
I don't think it was something you said. I think it might have been in terms of the NSA wanting to hedge their bets on with how their investments are going to go in the future, maybe. But anyway, we were just talking about Greece, and you're really of the opinion that that they're going to work a deal, that they're going to stay in. That's going to be your stance on that, huh? Okay.
Oh, yeah, no, I think it was done in the beginning. And all this posturing notwithstanding, of course, the finance minister has to look tough because he's being sold to the people of Greece as their savior.
Right.
The guy who's going to stand up against these guys, the boys.
Right.
But instead what he is dyed in the wool one of them, and he's going to sell his country out, plain and simple. He has no choice.
Right. Wow. Okay. Well, let's just take the opposite viewpoint just for a second, because I wanted to know
it'll happen today. If it's opposite, it'll happen today.
Right. That's, over the next 48 hours, right? I mean.
Right. We don't have to wait. Yeah.
Right. So what do you think the mechanics of that would look like if they did decide to go? You know, what would have to
happen? An implosion the likes of which Europe has never seen.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, the dominoes that would result from this would be startling, and it would be so financially sobering. I mean, it was like that Hank Paulson moment, you know, that's their AIG moment, their Lehman moment. That's what they're going through right now. And Greece, think of it as one of the member banks in this ECB. You know, you have to look at it as one of the member banks of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York.
Right.
And the Fed of New York, you know, what's its choice? So it's going to let Lehman go bankrupt, but it's going to save AIG. In this case, I don't think Greece will be allowed to exit the euro system because the impact would be devastating. So whatever it would cost, you know, it's okay for Germany to stand tough and pretend not be pliable or not be pliant at all, but at the end of the day, they will be.
Hmm. So, okay, I'm just thinking about, like, what physically would actually have to happen. I mean, they'd have to reliquidate, they'd have to fire up the presses, they'd have to start printing drachma again, they'd have to figure out a way to get all that into the banking system, right? I mean, we're talking about a major, would you think you'd see capital controls and possibly even border controls across the
EU,
right?
Yeah, and the people of Greece would suffer so greatly that they couldn't stand the shock. The government, first of all, the drachma would immediately be shunned in the international market. So the influence of the ECB on the Fed and the Bank of Japan, as well as the Swiss and others, would just simply make the drachma not a convertible currency at all.
Okay.
So you know, paying for their, what do they have? Tourism is what they export, right?
Right.
Paying for their imports would be impossible. It would be absolutely impossible. No one would accept their credit. And I just don't think Greece could stand on its own. It's impossible. They do not have enough gold. They don't have enough hard metal. They certainly don't have enough foreign exchange. And they don't have a viable product that they're exporting. You know, if they were sitting on a jabillion barrels of oil, although I do understand they have some gas findings off their coast.
Right, right.
That may be swaying people in the right direction. But the IMF and others are suggesting that they privatize all of this and, you know, all of that be sold naturally to the Seven Sisters, and then the money that they get from that used to pay off their debts. But what we should look at, I think, more importantly, is how Greece got into the euro in the first place.
Okay.
You know, they made rules very strict about how, what requirements were required to join the club. So you want to buy into the euro, great. You need to have no more than 60% of your GDP be devoted to debt. And so Greece was already at 90, somewhere close to 100,
right,
when Goldman Sachs was hired as their banker and came in and advised them how to cook the books, how to move some of this debt off the books so that it doesn't look like the government has greater than 60% of its GDP being spent on debt.
Okay.
So once the books were cooked, now they get into the euro, but then, you know, like any good recipe, it only hid it. It didn't solve it. It hid the problem. It didn't solve the problem. So as the bonds that and the currency swaps and debt swaps that the Goldman Sachs set up kind of came due, now the revelation that Greece was over the limit suddenly comes to light, but meanwhile they're already in the euro.
Right.
So this is not a new problem. This is a problem that has existed there for a long time.
Okay.
To suggest that this is something that no one has thought about, to me, it's the classic Hegelian dialectic. You know,
right.
Here's the problem. Let's create the problem. Let's rail about it and how bad it is, and then now let's come up with the solution, which is what we wanted in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think we are right now, with the finance minister of Greece negotiating with the Germans and others, and essentially coming out of this with an agreement that strengthens the position of the central bank and puts Greece into a dominant state, a subservient state, really, where they're completely reliant upon the ECB for their monetary policy.
Okay. Well, and, you know, the only other ancillary condition or consideration that I think we should be making, and I know that last time you and I talked, we spoke a little bit about the BRICS organization, and you were not very supportive. You're thinking they're not really ever going to have any real sway compared to the IMF. But I've been watching the Russian side of things pretty closely. I follow a lot of these kind of obscure websites and things like that, trying to figure out what's going on really fundamentally economically. And a couple of weeks ago, Russia had announced that they had gotten five of their major international banks hooked up with their alternative SWIFT system, right? And then just last week, that number ticked all the way up to 91. So I'm looking at this BRICS situation showing that they are creating this, you know, additional international framework that will not be really subject to any of the sanctions, which makes sense to me because that's why obviously North Korea is going to want to get if that influence is being overstated, that's fine. But I'm watching them build this system that will allow them to circumvent these sanctions. And also, obviously, there's been a little bit of communication between Putin and the new people in Greece saying, hey, if you guys do decide to leave, we got your back.
Let us know.
Know what I mean? And that obviously has a lot to do politically with what's going on with Russia and Greece, because Greece being part of the EU, they've got to be part of the coalition that continues to import sanctions against Russia. So you can see how this quagmire is just kind of getting really constricted. You know what I mean? And I'm wondering now.
I do remember.
The BRICS is kind of moving forward, do you feel like there's any courting opportunity there for Russia to get Greece away from the EU?
Well, I mean, I remember the days of the NFL, right? And, you know, how many people break away and form our own league. Yeah, we're going to reinvent the wheel.
Right.
And if there was any degree of strength that, you know, gave them this position, how many times have the Russians defaulted on their obligations just in the last century?
Right.
You know, the idea that we're going to trust them to run some kind of financial system and people are going to buy into it, the only people that would be desperados who would find themselves already outside. So, yeah, maybe they'll get Cuba and North Korea.
Well, they've got China on board, and China this year is going to be the new home of the IMF. Is that my mistake? I mean, am I wrong there?
No, you are correct. But to suggest that China is anything other than a partner to the people that own and control the Federal Reserve is really missing the boat.
Okay.
So, you know, if they're getting China in the deal, they might as well just call the New York Fed and get them in the deal as well.
Okay.
I don't see this as a credible threat. I see it as, again, a bunch of posturing. The idea that, and I know I've heard the meme now for two decades or more, since the beginning of the Euro formation, that this new currency will emerge and it's going to threaten the dollar's existence. Mm-hmm. And replace it as a world currency. That's the meme. And I would love to see that, because I really think that the Federal Reserve is one of the most evil institutions ever instituted by man.
Right.
However, they have built their power base over 100 plus years, and to suggest that Russia could dislodge them in a matter of months by simply doing a move like this would really, I mean, it's kind of like, why didn't you do it before? The reality is, they are, what do they call that? Whistling past the graveyard. You know, oh, we're okay. Don't worry about us. We're just going to set up this alternative system. But the reality is they don't have any sound currency. I mean,
right.
If you notice, they stopped their gold purchases last month.
China seems to have done the same thing. They seem to have kind of laid off the big purchase, which is weird with the dollar index being so high and gold being, really low right now.
Exactly.
That's unusual.
You would think they'd be piling in.
Or do they have enough already? Have they already built up their stockpile? No?
Not a chance. No, not a chance. What's happened instead is, quite frankly, they've run out of money. You know, in the case of Russia, the dollar at post-Bretton Woods has become the new gold. And until they can, and I understand their logic, right? If they can dislodge the dollar from that position as the new gold, well, then they most certainly can pose a credible threat. But that is an impossibility at the moment. The only thing that will dislodge the dollar from its position is the loss of confidence as in its ability to store wealth. And until and unless there's some event that destabilizes the dollar, and it won't be the Russian SWIFT system, I don't think we're going to see that in the short term. Hmm. The Fed has adopted their position of plunge protection, right? You know,
right.
First, what's that spurious Jefferson quote? It's first by inflation, then by deflation, they'll deprive the people of all property.
Mm-hmm.
So they've built the strength of the dollar to the point that it is now. Where are we trading in the high 90s on the dollar index?
Yeah, 94
today. And that's unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that gold has not reacted to the downside more than it has. I mean, when you have a 95 handle on the dollar index, you would expect gold to be sub 1,000,
right.
700, 650. Mm-hmm. But instead, it's holding rock solid at 1,200, which suggests to me that the strength in the dollar is all illusion. But it is this real illusion, meaning the Russians have to secure dollars at 95 in order to pay off their existing international debts, which are dollar denominated. They
right.
just do not have enough money, and it just doesn't. Well, let's face the facts. They don't have enough foreign reserves to pay their debts.
Roger that. Okay. Well, we've got to run to a quick 3-minute break, Andrew. We're going to go to these commercials. We'll be right back. I don't know. I wonder if the strength of the dollar is still somehow related to Kim Jong-un's new haircut. So we're going to have to come back and talk about that a little bit when we get back. Keep it right here, ladies and gentlemen. Appreciate you guys being in the chat room. 3-minute break.
Hey, Big Mouth. Yeah, you. Listen, I want you to put the word out on the street. Tell your coworkers, your family, your paisanos, that my good friend, Joe Joseph, is doing a good thing here. He's sticking his neck out for me, for Sil, and for all the people in the world. Isn't that right, Sil?
He's part of the family now, T.
That's what I thought. So tune in to him. Right here on Freedom Link, Monday to Friday, exclusively on the Truth Frequency Radio. Yeah, they're watching you. Big deal. They're watching me, too. They're watching everybody. So grow some cojones and give them something to watch and listen to. Make them earn it. Give them paperwork until they choke. That's right. I know you won't let me down. So you're going to put the word out about my good friend, Joe Joseph, right? Good. Now do me a favor and get out of here.
After work, I'm so tired that I want to be left alone to sleep.
Hey,
Listen to me.
Who are you?
I'm you years ago, when you felt healthy and young and everything worked on your body. Do you remember that?
Yes. I wish I felt like that now.
You can feel like that again with a new microplant powder formulation called Iodine Now. It cleans the entire body from head to toe and feeds the body what it really needs. You'll be in a better mood and you'll find more drive in your romantic life.
Really?
I gotta try Iodine Now and feel good again. It also protects you from radiation, heavy metals, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including cancer and most major diseases. You'll be amazed. You can be your own doctor. I want to keep you out of the hospital and off pharmaceuticals.
Wow. Why are you so nice to me?
Because I'm you. You're out of shape, and I need a better-looking future.
Call 888-910-4367. That's 888-910-4367. Iodine Now. Only at MUSA.org.
We all know the importance of having storable foods. But what about when the food runs out? What then? For real food independence, you need a supply of non-hybrid seeds. Introducing the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. The Survival Seed Vault is sealed for freshness and includes 20 varieties of easy-to-grow non-hybrid seeds for only $37.95. For less than $40, you've got real food independence, and the Survival Seed Vault includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions. Imagine the barter power you'll have when the food supply does collapse. Right now, save $9 instantly when you buy three or more Survival Seed Vaults from MyPatriotSupply.com. Same-day shipping on all orders, plus free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness products at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
TFR Roundtable, Saturdays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. And thank you all of you who are in the chat room today. If you guys have any questions for Andrew Gause or comments or anything like that, lay them up in there and I will shuffle them across to Mr. Gause. We're having a pretty interesting discussion about geopolitics and economics today and trying to figure out exactly what's going to happen with this whole Greece situation, as well as King Jong-un's new haircut, because there's a lot of stuff happening in the world, ladies and gentlemen. Andrew, want to talk to you real quick about the collapsitarian theory, whether or not you are a proponent of the idea that the dollar eventually will collapse, or whether or not you feel like the euro might collapse, and whether or not you know, which one you think might go first, or if you think either of them are going to go at all. What are your thoughts on those events?
Yeah, I think neither of them are going to go at all. I'm more of a student of physics.
Okay.
And that's about, like, if you take two objects and you close the distance between them by half at regular intervals, they will never touch, right?
Right, okay.
Right, because you're only closing the distance by half. So as I've always said and will say here, neither of these will collapse until they run out of zeros. And Lord knows there's no shortage of those. So the position that the dollar ink people put themselves in is such that they control the issuance of this element, and there is no profit in collapse. Now, I know the crashaholics say that they'll crash the system and then buy everyone's property on the cheap.
They've
right?
done
that's
it before. Yeah, I mean, that's what
they've done it before.
Rothschild did after, what, the Battle of Waterloo, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. And, you know, he did, in fact, buy the British consul and made the biggest score by coming into this exchange and pretending that he was selling.
Yes.
And then when everyone saw him selling, they said, oh, he must know something that we don't. They all started selling.
Right.
And then at the bottom of the panic, he came in and bought it all back.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that, of course, in a gold standard, is just about the only way that you can do this. Jay Gould and the 1869 gold corner, which led, I believe, to the collapse of Jay Cook, 73, and all had the same problem, and that was that they were dealing with a commodity that was in fixed supply.
Okay.
And so the first depression that everyone talks about, the Great Depression, removed from consideration the idea that they needed a fixed amount of gold behind or backing their currency. And they stayed on this de facto pseudo-gold standard from 34 until 71. And all during that period, the possibility of a crash or collapse was no question on the table. But once they closed the gold window in 71 and then removed the ability of the Congress and the banking community to limit the monetization of debt, and this was through the Monetary Decontrol Act of 1980, which essentially said that the Fed had the authority to convert any debt instrument into current money. So now all restrictions are removed from them on the ability to control the supply of dollars. And once that threat is removed, now here's the game, is to convince Americans to do three things. One, pay off your debts early. Two, live debt-free. And three, save your money. So if you'll do those three things for the people that own the Federal Reserve, then they get to borrow the money that you've saved and use that to buy critical assets. So they don't need to crash the system in order to buy everything on the cheap. That old libertarian maxim of whoever has the first use of money gets the best use of it.
Right.
So simply create $1 trillion, buy everything that you want. By the time that $1 trillion trickles into circulation, the value of your asset will have risen. It's just plain and simple.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't need to crash the system in order to buy everything in sight. The disparity in incomes and, you know, this 4,000 people control, you know, 70% of the world's wealth or even greater, that is not done by crash and collapse. That's done through the monetization of debt and the using of that money, with which I use the term loosely,
right,
to buy critical assets. I mean, look what they've bought, anything and everything in sight.
Mm-hmm.
Mergers and acquisitions in the last quarter, goodness, they set a record. I think $1 trillion on the book of just Goldman Sachs.
Wow.
So this is the game. It is monetization of debt, use that to buy critical assets at a time, and this is a great element, a measurement to look at. If you want to confirm this for yourself, look at the St. Louis Fed MZM, money with a zero maturity.
Okay.
And what you'll see is that in 2007, we collectively, as a nation, as a world, as individuals, had $6 trillion in liquid money ready to spend. MZM, money with a zero maturity.
Okay.
Today, that number is $13
trillion. Oh.
So the supply of money and people's, the idea that Americans are hoarding their money and not spending it, monetary velocity is as low as it's been in 40 years, meaning we get a dollar, we don't turn it over, we just save it.
Yeah.
We put it in the bank. Mm-hmm. We hold it. Even in zero interest rate environment, people are hoarding money. And that is exactly what the powers that be want them to do.
Wow. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, I had another question in my mind, and then you just totally distracted me, and now I'm curious.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
I'm going to put a caveat in here.
Yeah, do it.
Because this is important.
Okay.
I buy and sell American gold and silver coins.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's my living. I'm a numismatist. I buy and sell them. I wrote a couple books, but I make the bulk of my living from buying and selling American coins, rare coins. And it would be so easy for me to sit here, JD, and say to you, oh, doom and gloom, man, dollar's going to collapse, sell everything you own, and what should you buy?
Right.
Gold and silver coins, man, put all your money. No, I'm just not going to do it, because as much as that might help my business, it certainly isn't what I independently believe. And, you know, great coins are a great investment and a wonderful thing to own. Everyone should have a portion of their wealth in gold and silver coins of the Constitution. But to do it because the dollar is going to collapse tomorrow is the worst reason I've ever heard.
Okay. I'm personally stocking up on those little bitty bottles of booze. You know what I mean? I think those are going to be a hell of a commodity.
Oh, you know it.
You know what I mean?
Man.
Boy, one of those things,
absolutely.
$10 or whatever after.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you look at the Russian situation as a perfect example.
Yes.
In every one of these crises, the Russian sales of vodka go off the charts.
Yeah.
So there's no doubt that alcohol and misery go well together.
Well together. Hey, I got back to my other question. Are we right now to be panicking about about the Baltic Dry Index, or does this have more to do with the fact that the ports are shutting down and we're in a Chinese New Year right now? Like, what's really going on with the situation in terms of the BDI right now, sir?
Well, there are some seasonal adjustments, to be sure. But to me, the Baltic Dry Index is a great indicator of international movements of goods. And, you know, if you think about the train that has been the line of ships coming across the Pacific, flooding the ports with goods, certainly one would look at the Baltic Dry Index, which is the cost that shippers charge to ship goods across the world by boat. And, you know, they look at it and say, they quantify it to a certain thing. When the thing is rising, it means that nations are producing a lot of stuff and putting it on boats and shipping it.
Right.
When it's falling to the level that it is, it suggests the opposite, that you're not creating enough material to put on boats and ship to other nations. And yeah, that should be a cause for concern. But at the same time, with the dollar at 95, who the heck is buying U.S. goods? You know, that isn't going on at all.
Right.
I think a lot of the goods from China are making their way into Europe without a ship. And that, of course, doesn't bode well for the Baltic Dry Index.
Well, and they're saying, too, there's a little bit of a fear that even after this slowdown or shutdown, whatever you want to call it, is remedied, that we may have lost, you know, some of our international connections and we may not see those numbers come, you know, flying back up anytime soon. So just another.
Well, I don't know that I agree with that part.
Okay.
Because I think all of this is dollar driven. So the U.S. dollar index to me is unnaturally high, and the exhaustion that it's starting to show indicates that it's probably heading back towards its mean. And, you know, you look down in the 70s, which is where the dollar belongs. It's a pretty significant drop from where it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine what has happened to the exports in the United States, except that we've offset through our oil creation,
mm-hmm.
A little bit of the what otherwise would, I mean, without the oil industry doing what it has done in the last 10 years for the United States gross domestic product, the dollar would be 70 right now. So, you know, the fact is we've offset some of our loss.
Oh, no. Come back. Man, NSA does not want you guys have any sound financial advice, it does sound like here, ladies and gentlemen. So just bear with me here. I'll see if I can get him back on the air. Give me just 1 second here. Sometimes this is what happens. We get into these deep conversations and the NSA says, oh, I don't want anybody hearing this stuff. And then they just cut our Skype connection. So that's what happened, I think, on this particular occasion. I apologize about that, Andrew.
It's all right. It's to sum up that I don't think that the BDI reflects, well, it does reflect, I should say, the lack of exports from the United States. And once the dollar falls again, then I think John Deere and Caterpillar and Boeing and others, the companies that really export a lot of American products, will suddenly pick up again. But for the moment, watch that trade deficit number, because obviously we're not selling American goods overseas. They're just too damn expensive.
Right.
And that, of course, cuts into the shipping and certainly reflects in the BDI.
What's it going to take to get that up, though? I mean, what are we looking for in terms of changes in the economy to make that better, that number? You know,
well, it's a $72, you know, instead of a 95 U.S. dollar index, a 72 U.S. dollar index. And, you know, as that slide in the dollar begins, it's going to be coupled with, and this is so curious, that the strength of the dollar is what's preventing the economy from exploding. If you drop the dollar down to 72, you would suddenly see a burst of inflation that would just ignite the economy like a rocket. I've likened it to strapping a rocket on a skateboard, because the inflation is built into the system and it's pent up. The only thing that's preventing it from revealing itself is the unnatural strength of the dollar. Once the dollar starts its slide back to mean, because remember, it is at the, if you look at the chart, it's at, you know, the top of its range. Mm-hmm. And as it slides back to where it was or where it should be, then that's going to ignite a fire under U.S. exports and certainly put us in a position. And then having now cut our imports, I think it will bode.
Oh, Might have lost him again, ladies and gentlemen. I got a follow-up question. I got to get him back on the air here. Hang on 1 second, guys. Let's see if we can get... We're having some major phone issues today. Appreciate you guys all hanging in there. Obsidian, I hear your contradiction question, and I'm going to try and answer that for you in just a second. So give me a...
That's it, dude. I'm getting my tinfoil hat.
I know, right? We've only got to make it through another 13 minutes. We can do this, I promise.
Okay.
But a question from the chat room. People are kind of confused about this idea of the dollar sliding back from 95 to, say, 70. That to you does not represent a quote-unquote collapse of the dollar, though, correct? That's just a...
No, that's a return to the mean.
Okay.
A return to the mean.
Okay,
yes.
Roger that. I want to change gears here real quick because sometimes I have questions and I don't care if anybody else likes them or not. But you were on the show three weeks ago, and we were talking about buying numismatic. Between buying gold and buying the numismatic stuff. And so I went out and I doing a little diligence, and I would like to buy some 90% silver coins. And here's where the problem, here's where the question is that I've got in mind. I get my stuff from the same dealer I get all my stuff from, and there's an option on the table, and it is that I could buy 90% silver in quantities of face value, or I could buy them in quantities of just weight, an ounce. And I can't for the life of me figure out which is the better value, man. What do you think?
Well, you know, clearly, if you buy it in face value and all you get are heavily circulated coins, you could lose through that sweat several percentage points. So, you know, typically, if you look at the Red Book, Guidebook of United States Coins, mm-hmm. and you look at the metal content as it comes off of the mint, you'll find that the ratio from dimes to halves is slightly different. So weight seems to me to be the way to buy, but you figure a bag, a $1,000 bag, at 720 ounces, 0.72.
Okay.
So, you know, 720 ounces to the bag, as long as it meets that weight, then you've gotten what you paid for it. If you buy it by a multiple of face value, you want to just make sure that you're not getting all worn out dimes, because, you know, then the difference between the 720, you know, you could be getting as little as 705 ounces in that bag.
Just because of the wear and tear on the actual coins is what you're saying?
Absolutely. And on the dimes, it's much more pronounced. If you look at a silver dime, the typical, and it's what the dealers will call junk silver.
Right.
So we don't deal in that stuff because, I mean, quite honestly, there's very little numismatic value there anyway. So what I try to do is specific buys, like, for example, Franklin half dollars or Walking Liberty half dollars. Now, the weight of those as they came off the mint was 0.36169. And even if the devices are almost completely worn off, you're still going to get at least 0.36. So in the case of a dime, however, if half the devices are worn down, because it's so small, you could lose 30% of its value, 30% of its metal content.
So do you not recommend any junk silver?
If you're going to buy by face, buy the halves.
And so you don't recommend any junk silver at all then?
No. No, really? once it's lost its numismatic value due to wear. Like the coin is worn so far that it has no more numismatic value, then it gets thrown in the bag and sold for its silver content. That's all you're buying is silver.
Right.
So I recommend instead that you pay that little extra premium and get the better coins that at least have a chance to gain, in addition to the value of the metal, the numismatic value that's built into the coin. It's just not yet recognized. So junk, in the terms of the coin is so worn, so damaged, so defaced, that its only value is for the silver that's left in it, that has to be bought by weight. It cannot be bought by face value.
Okay.
In the case of a Ben Franklin half dollar that's on a scale of 1 to 70 still above 40 or 50 in grade, now you've got a coin that has the potential to become numismatic for just a few pennies more than one that has been worn out and thrown in a bag for just junk silver.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my recommendation is slightly different from those that say, you know, buy the worst coins and just buy them for the weight. You might as well just buy silver bars then, because you're not going to get any numismatic premium ever for those coins. You know, can't tell what they are.
I would have thought that getting the junk silver ones over the, I mean, I granted the silver bars makes a lot of sense because it's 100% silver, but I always go back to, you know, if the poop hits the fan and we're all at a bartering level where we're all, you know, tied to our communities, then I would think that the, even if the junk silver, people would know it's silver and it has that recognition. People already understand that back then there was more potential that the treasury or the mint was actually doing what they said that they were doing and that, you know what I mean? So I look at that
yes,
as having some recognizable value, community wise. So I guess.
Yeah, I do agree with that. And okay. Maybe I was being a bit facetious to say that you might as well just buy silver, but as long as it's recognizable as an old silver dime or recognizable as an old silver quarter, mm-hmm. You're right. It will have a greater level of acceptance than just a randomly issued bar of silver that may or may not be authentic.
Right.
So I do agree, but I would urge people don't buy the worst or the junk silver. And if you do, buy it at the weight of 720 ounces per bag, per 0.72 ounces per dollar. And if, you know, if it doesn't weigh, when you weigh your quantity, if it doesn't weigh 0.72 per dollar, then you've paid too much.
Okay, roger that. That's good advice. Cause I know there are people out there who probably do want to buy a couple of ounces or we're toying with the same idea, you know, buying it versus face value. Cause for me, it's just, I just want to have some extra silver around that I know will be barterable later and things like that. So you're saying buying it by
yes.
weight makes the most sense as long as you verify that you're getting what you pay for. That totally
That's
makes
right.
sense to me. What about, we had this story that just broke, coming out of France overnight where there was a retired guy and he got conned by a couple of police officers who were not police officers and they ended up stealing about $500,000 worth of gold bars from him, over the last week. And so there's some considerations that we should probably talk about there. You know, do you want to talk about safety, about, you know, with having some of this at home? Where do you store it? How do you store it? Where, you know, to me, if you've got $500,000 worth of gold, you can afford a safe. And the guy obviously didn't have one.
That's
so,
right.
you know, thinking about
well,
where
or even
where
if he did, you know, he might have broken it open for the fake cops.
Right.
You know, that's the thing. But this is what I've always said, that the catch, if you will, in putting your money in gold and silver coins is exactly this. You must take responsibility for its storage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with money in the bank or with money in a gold fund or in a stock or in a bond, that's all on the broker, you know, and none of it is on you. But with money in gold, silver, or gold and silver coins, storage is the number one issue, the number one problem. It's the only way that you're going to lose all your money is if you actually lose the gold coins or the gold bars.
Right.
And that really is something that great many people aren't ready to take. So anyone out there who's considering the purchase of gold and silver coin or gold bullion or silver bullion had really better take careful consideration of where they're going to put it. Because in the case of gold and silver coins, American coins, these are a bearer investment, meaning whoever has them can turn them into money without a clear title.
Right.
I mean, there's no piece of paper that goes with them that certifies that they own it.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as they have it in their hand, they can turn it into money. And that is the number one thing to consider if you're considering gold and silver coin. Yeah, it's a great investment. Yes, you'll do well. I mean, you know, look at gold now at $1,200 is four times what it was 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Silver about the same. That's a wonderful investment just on the bullion edge. On the numismatic edge, the growth is 2-1, 3-1 over bullion. So it's a great return on investment. However, if you lose the coins or the gold, you're done. I mean, there's nothing for you to do. So, yeah, I would hope folks would use this as a lesson.
Yeah, what do you think? PVC and bury it in the backyard, or what do you think?
Well, that's a good one. I mean, there are as many different solutions to the problem as there are people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've heard great ones like synthetic pipes, never mind in the backyard, PVC pipe tied to the rafters in your basement that looks like every other pipe in the basement.
Ooh, that's
you know, with a hollow end, right? That's a great storage method.
Mm-hmm.
Old water heater hollowed out, old refrigerator. I even had one person take blue food coloring and put it in a container and then freeze it in her freezer. So, I mean, again, there are as many different methods as there are people. But the caution that I would urge you with there that, you know, you don't get with a simple safe is make sure you tell your wife, your husband, your
yes.
significant other, your kids,
put
somebody,
yeah.
where it is. Yeah, because, you know, it's there's been a lot of coins lost through this sort of well hidden, you know, too well hidden.
Hence my new desire for a metal detector out there, just putting that out there. There's, I've been really, really toying with the idea of doing some urban exploration just to see, you know, anytime you live in a town that was from the 1800s, probably worth looking around a little bit, I would think.
Oh, you know it is. You remember the couple from California last year who were walking on their property that they'd owned for many years and
would
stumbled
they find
upon
nine cans? Oh, unbelievable. Yeah. Well, there was a guy
which turned out to be worth, you know, $10 million. I mean, its gold, just its bullion value was like $1 million, but then its numismatic value was $10 million.
Right.
So that obviously there are these caches and hoards hidden all around the country, and you're right, any town before 1800 is going to be a good prospect.
Well, we had a guy here up in Moberly, which is a community not very far from us, and he was doing some detecting on his property, and he got a hit on a tree that was on an old property and ended up getting into the hollow part of the tree and found a couple of very large gold bars that were, you know, apparently from a robbery that had taken place, and the guy had stashed them in a tree and never came back, and this guy found two. I think they were both 5 kilograms apiece. I just talked about
the
tree.
Yeah, that's quite a find. You know, that's a pretty good chunk of gold there.
Like the greatest day ever. Well, Andrew, we are narrowly running out of time. We've only got about a couple of minutes left. I do want to encourage everyone to go to usgoldcoins.com. And I just kind of want to open the floor if there's anything else that you'd like to kind of talk to us about today, any other considerations, hot points in the economy, things that you guys, you know, think we should be investing in terms of commodities that maybe we're not thinking of, just anything like that that you want to go with. Andrew, the floor is yours, sir.
Oh, thanks. Well, you know, I've put together 3 audio CDs, JD, to try to sum the knowledge that I've accumulated over 40 years, and it's not easy. But the first one, the Federal Reserve, just deals with the Federal Reserve, what it is, who it is. You know, you hear so many stories, it's good to get some facts, and this one will give you that. There's no commercial content. It's strictly an educational CD on the workings of the Federal Reserve, its history, and its operations. The second CD that I've compiled is called The Definition of Money. What the heck is a dollar anyway?
Right.
And, you know, how do you protect them? And then the third, of course, you have Protecting Your Wealth. That's the commercial one of the three. That one tells you how to buy gold and silver coins, you know, like what we were just talking about, the weight and where to buy and how to buy and how to make sure you're getting what you paid for and so forth. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's a plug for my company on that one, but you don't even have to take that one if you don't want it. You could call the 800 number and ask for just the 2 educational CDs, or if you're interested in gold and silver, then you get all 3, and just mention that you heard it on the Red Pill Report, and they'll come to you free with no obligation, and I promise you, you're not going to get a bunch of high-pressure phone calls or anything like that. It's a simple transaction for us, and we try to keep it simple. So 800-468-2646. Make sure you mention Red Pill Reports. This is normally a $30 package.
Oh.
We're going to give it to you free. Just, again, mention that you heard it on the Red Pill Reports. We'll send you a full background information on the company as well as these 3 audio CDs. And just that, in a nutshell, will give you enough of an education that you can carry on an intelligent conversation with someone about the Fed or about money or about what to do to protect your wealth.
Outstanding.
And that number again, 800-468-2646. Mention the Red Pill Report.
Oh, Andrew, thank you so much, buddy. Appreciate you being on the show today. You take care and have a wonderful weekend, okay, sir?
Thank you, man.
Mm-hmm. Again, ladies and gentlemen, usgoldcoins.com, that number to call, 800-468-2646. Tell him we sent you, and you'll get some of that informational stuff for free. Man, that's just so nice of him. Okay, we got to go, ladies and gentlemen. That was it. That was the whole week. You squandered another week listening to us. Stay tuned for the Waterman Files. John Waterman.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information. Without the hate, hype, and fear, we are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUE.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio.
TFR. Make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.